This is a Power 98.7 podcast. Now we're talking. Subscribe to Power 98.7 podcasts in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. There's more on power987.co.za.
It is the last hour of Power Talk this Monday. And as we do on Mondays, we take a view of the nation. And today we want to look at the township economy. But perhaps let me first qualify what we mean by it. Most of us grew up in townships. We appreciate and value the sense of community, how enterprising people are, whether they're running spaza shops or community supermarkets, and how people build together. We recognize the intrinsic value that there is there. But often when we talk about township economies, it certainly strikes me that we are talking about fixing the model, stimulating the existing or catalyzing the existing system to just give it momentum. And yet we could be reimagining the township economy, completely saying control, alt, delete, scrap what you know and understand about the township economy, and let's reimagine. And the reason is this: if it is indeed true that a new way of doing business is upon us, a new way of working is upon us, more flexible labor systems, more flexible workspaces, digital platforms for trade and sales, e-commerce, Instagram sales channels, where people don't necessarily all need brick and mortar structures to have a shop, different ways of warehousing, storing food, smart cities, green economies and different ways to produce energy, solar panels everywhere, solar geysers. If that's the world that is upon us, it's a grassroots world. It's a world that never existed before. And so for everyone, it's brand new. What are the opportunities along this brand new fledgling chain of commerce where we can start utilizing the talents, the human capital, the ingenuity, the creativity of communities in the townships to allow them to participate in something brand new, a different way of seeing things, a different way of thinking? That's the township economy conversation we're having today. The township economy itself currently is estimated to be worth 900 billion rands, or 60% of the market that's considered formal and informal is found there. Now, again, the South African economy, today we were talking about the value of the economy, just the value. We're not talking about how it works, doesn't work, just the value. South Africa is a 5.5 trillion rand economy. In dollar terms, that's about $300 billion, give or take. But this is a 5.5 trillion rand economy. That's the value, which grew by 33% since 1994. That's all we're talking about, the value. A 5.5 trillion rand economy. So when they say the township economy is 900 billion, that means 1 trillion almost of this South Africa is money in the townships. In other words, 20% of South Africa incorporated is in the townships. 1/5 of the value of this economy is in the township. That's what that 900 billion, give or take, is telling us. So why can't we multiply? And what is the multiplier effect? We're joined now by Selebogo Molefe, the managing director of the BizPlug. And hopefully we're going to be able to speak to Bulelani Balabala, the director of the Township Entrepreneurs Alliance, in a short while. But Ntate Molefe, good morning.
Oh, good morning. Thank you for having me.
Thank you. What is the BizPlug?
Enterprise Development Agency. We focus on developing entrepreneurs and small business owners in rural areas as well as townships.
Okay, enterprise development. So what? How does that work? So you look at someone and you say, oh, Lerato, is that you making candles? You could scale it up and create a much bigger business.
Yeah, we're an intermediary between the small business owner and enterprise development programs that are spearheaded by either government or the private sector. So they come to guys like us to actually implement. So you can call us an implementing agent.
Okay. Yeah. You know, when we introduced the subject earlier on, quite a few people just started kind of talking about it. But I'm really intrigued by a comment that Prometheus has made. I just have to find it to read it properly. Prometheus Unbound says, Lerato, it's ridiculous to always want everyone to be an entrepreneur or an employer.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Who are these entrepreneurs going to employ? So it's not a disgrace or a shame, he says, to want to build great employees. Not everyone is destined to own a business, be an employer, be a CEO. Mm-hmm. Some people are destined to work for other people.
Yep.
What needs to happen is that these employees need to be incentivized, properly paid, properly trained, and just given the tools to be optimal. What do you make of a comment like that?
You know, in one of my the other hats I wear, I'm a VP in an NPO in the UK. It's called the John Cragner Youth Enterprise Bank. And we fund young people between the ages of 15 and 25.
Yeah.
Anything from £100 all the way to £1,000, depending on their needs. You know, something I've learned over time, we need an enterprising culture, generally speaking, from the populace. We've got people who are waiting to be told what to do. And when you start searching as to why this is happening, is because we're not an innovation-driven market, generally speaking.
South Africa.
Yeah, as South Africa. We're an efficiency-driven market. So we're all about the checks and balances instead of testing new things, testing new ideas and seeing where things can go. And that's why, even though we've got such a high rate of people starting businesses or coming up with ideas, there's no innovation. We're not seeing enough of imagination coming into play.
Wow.
And it's because in our education system, we're not enterprising. We're not driving innovation or creativity, allowing people to be and knowing that whatever that they're coming up with is probably going to fail. But it's okay.
So let's just understand what you're saying. So when you say South Africa, for all intents and purposes, is an efficiency-driven market.
Yeah.
In other words, when I go to university, I go to university knowing one day I'm going to work for someone.
Yep.
I study law because my aspiration is to be a partner in this prestigious law firm.
Yep.
It doesn't occur to me that one day I could run my own law firm.
Mm-hmm.
I aspire to be part of an existing system.
Yeah.
And when I get there, with my cum laude law degree, I build efficiency in law firm X. I make them run better.
Yeah.
But that's all I'm ever going to be.
Yeah. Even in our investments. I mean, when you look at the venture capital market in South Africa, they are primarily run by accountants. And we know accountants as bean counters. They are about checks and balances. If things don't balance, hey, hang on. So we're not pro-risk. Generally, and if you look at any other markets that are driving entrepreneurship and the culture of entrepreneurship and where people are coming up with new things, there's an inherent nature of taking risk, and it's allowed, you know.
Okay, so innovation, imagination driven economies.
Yeah.
Okay, obviously all the time people tell you about the USA because it's true.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, in the USA you can they say this is the one country where you can go bankrupt 5 times and the bank will still give you money for as long as you've got an idea that looks smart. They'll keep betting on you until they can no longer bet on you, and this is why you get these places like Silicon Valley in the Bay Area and San Francisco, which is all innovation, ideas being tested and venture capital close by. What creates that kind of culture?
It takes time. I mean, Silicon Valley in the 60s versus what we see now is a totally different picture. The reason all of that came about was because it was driven by the army and what needed to happen, NASA, all of those things. But over time, as people get richer, they start exploring new things. And this is why we see a lot of technology being based in Silicon Valley and taking over the world.
Okay.
If we bring it back to South Africa, for instance, I think education is at the core. And I think we probably have this first or second generation of entrepreneurs coming out of townships that now have degrees. So people who started businesses before this, they were not educated. They were hustling. and it was survivalist. And unfortunately, everything takes a bit of time. We're only 30 years old as a democracy.
Okay. I want to tap into your Silicon Valley example when you say it was first driven by the military-industrial complex.
Yeah.
So NASA and the Army found this place in San Francisco and California and said, let's see if we can experiment with new technology, armaments, etc., etc. And then that stimulated something else on the innovation side. So we've got Donnell, for instance, which up until recently was a state-owned company that was in the black.
Mm.
I'm not going to say profitable, but certainly wasn't in debts.
Yeah.
They innovated incredibly with Arms Corps as well. They've built helicopters and all manner of munitions. So that is the bedrock, you are saying, of a new innovation in industry, is that we don't have to be making guns, but that technology could start leading us to be making computers and then cars and then something else and then different innovations in flight simulators because the ecosystem exists just right there in terms of high-tech, high-science engineering skills. It's right there at Donnell. And we should just be making it that place.
And removing the bureaucracy that comes with that. So we find a lot of gatekeepers where there's so much innovations that university students are coming up with, but they never see the light of day because just the system on its own is not allowing for testing of things, allowing for ownership of these new things and driving collaboration at the same point. And when you look at South Africans in general, South Africans are smart and South Africans all over the world are doing some really amazing things
outside
of the country. You know, even when you're starting to think about scaling anything that you've come up with, you have to incorporate outside of the country if you you stand a chance.
Right. Yeah. And that's what's meant by the enabling environment.
Yeah.
When people talk about an enabling environment, is that the government, what they can do is say, what do we have? Mm. We've got the Donnells, which can be centers of innovation.
Yeah.
We've got the banks doing stuff like, tapping into new payment systems and fintech and the like.
Yeah.
We could create incubators where the banks don't have to develop the technology in-house.
Mm.
They can develop it in an open source type environment.
Yes.
And then these young people from the townships and elsewhere can come there and see if they can find Please Call Me.
Yeah.
If Please Call Me is created outside of Vodacom in a neutral sphere, it becomes a South African innovation and then you don't have all these battles in court.
Yeah. And the other thing we struggle with is the private sector will fund ideation processes and environments where innovation can be driven. But they're also big on ownership. And if we really want to see a new breed of entrepreneurs coming out, it cannot be owned by the multinationals or the big corporates. So they will fund incubation centers and accelerators, and we see a lot of them. But what comes out of that? Very few that go on to see the light of day because they might just be competition for them.
All right. Yeah. So you're giving us the foundation of how you stimulate a new economy. You have to support ideas.
Mm.
And you have to create a neutral ground where ideas can be researched, prototyped, tested, and failed.
Mm.
So we need to be resourcing more the CSIR and those kinds of places, so that innovations really come from that kind of environment and then are corporatized.
Yeah.
So that's the first thing.
Yeah.
The schools need to be another place as well. Mm. That's the second thing. And then what else?
There's a lot. I mean, I think, for instance, when you just look at people in general, there's so much creativity, but it's stifled. So I don't think we're tapping into the youthfulness of our country. We've got a lot of young people who are constantly seeing things on the internet. They want to try it out themselves. And they just stifled because, you know, we might cry and say we lack resources and stuff, but I think the culture itself. So if we're to stimulate the culture and drive a different environment, even in universities.
Okay. Yeah. And when you say culture, it just reminds me, of what you said when we started, is we can't all be going to university or TVET colleges preparing us to go and work for someone.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Right?
Yeah.
So you go to university to gather the knowledge, which ultimately you should be bracing yourself to use to build your empire.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So to that end, you know, research was done in Nigeria a few years ago. Because we know the Nigerian state, for all intents and purposes, is a very dysfunctional state.
Yes.
Nothing works
if
the government has its hand in it in Nigeria. And yet people are thriving in many different ways. And when they, and I think Harvard did the study, and when they went to universities in Nigeria and asked young people in a survey, when you finish your degree, who do you want to work for? Do you know that 97% of the students in the survey said, for myself? Nobody wakes up wanting to work for the state. Everybody wants to wake up working for themselves. So you're in engineering school because one day you want to have your own engineering firm. You're in medical school because one day you want to own a hospital. You want to be a shareholder in a community clinic, and so on and so forth. So the psychology in some of these countries is that you are the self-starter. You are the master of your destiny. That's not the psychology in South Africa.
And it's also because things work here. And I think in Nigeria, because things don't work, you know, you don't have that option. You know, if you look at another case, it's Kenya. In Kenya, they almost call the Silicon Savannah of Africa because they don't have certain infrastructures in place. So they've had to leapfrog forward. So I think the culture is always embedded or bred by what the environment looks like or what the need is in that particular environment. In South Africa, a lot of things work. Here, I mean, this is why half of the country is on grants and stuff, because things work. We just don't have enough of a tax base. And the question is, what happens from there?
I just want you to qualify that before people lynch you. So, so people are on social grants because there is a system of administering social grants.
Yes.
Collecting taxes, which can then be used for pro-poor policies. It's not that we're saying they're okay.
Yeah, they're
not social grants. Yeah. But in other countries, there is no social grant.
In most African countries, you don't find what you find here in South Africa. Our roads work, and they work because we've been able to collect money for fixing those roads, even though they're in a terrible
state. So back to what you're saying. So if we use that social grant analogy, if you were in, you know, Angola, and there's COVID. The government's going to announce there is this virus. Take it or leave it, good luck. Here, the government says there's this virus, there's a lockdown, we're going to make this intervention, that intervention, there'll be a solidarity fund, we're going to administer vaccines with the private sector, and then after that, we're going to give you a social distress. So the system will protect you some way.
Yes.
And so the pressure on you to figure it out is not there. In other countries, there is no system. So people, every day when they wake up, they're on their own.
Yeah.
And so they become entrepreneurs because they know, if I don't wake up, Mvuga Ngiyo's Pandela, nothing's going to happen for me. And that's why there's a culture of entrepreneurship elsewhere. Because people know there is no social distress and relief grant. There's no SASSA grant. There's no child grant. There's nothing. It's you and your maker. Good luck to you.
And you know, if we're making that example about African countries always seeing entrepreneurship coming out, then you look at America. And we can easily say America is an enterprising country, right? With a culture of entrepreneurship. But it's actually just regions. There's pockets that are brilliant with supporting innovation and creativity. This is why Silicon Valley keeps popping up. But America is much bigger than Silicon Valley, right? Majority of Americans are also on grants. So constantly it's like, what is this thing that pushes people towards wanting to do something for themselves? It's either you know that you're not going to get any support from the system, so I might as well do something for myself, or there's an enabling environment that pushes you
forward. Let's focus on that US example just generally. So Silicon Valley is in California, but in Northern California, near San Francisco. Okay? And that's where you see a lot of tech innovation, big tech coming up. That's where the Googles, the Ubers, Twitters, Microsoft, well, Apple. Microsoft is in Seattle, but you see them there. But in California, in the South, Los Angeles, that's music and entertainment country. That's Hollywood. And that's where people go to create something or to be part of something creative. If you want to work in high finance, you go to New York. Wall Street. You know, banks. That's where you find it. But increasingly now, like Tyler Perry building his studios, Atlanta with BET is coming up as a new kind of black entertainment hub. And Texas and the oil. So that's what you mean by pockets. So find what people are interested and are good at,
yeah.
and then create havens. Is this what you're saying?
Yeah.
And South Africa could do the same.
Yeah, I mean, Cape Town is not doing bad at all
okay.
when it comes to supporting fintech.
Okay.
A lot of entrepreneurs who are incorporating from that side, they've got access to the support. I mean, even the big groups that are emerging, you look at Takealot, you can see that it's because the environment that they're in as a head office supports all of that type of innovation.
And so Joburg is what? Services.
Yeah, Joburg is services and finance.
Okay.
It feels like here, and also there's a racial challenge, right? In Joburg, as a black entrepreneur, you're bound to get more support without any strings attached than in Cape Town, you know. Mm. So
that's a topic for another day.
Okay, yeah.
But that's Joburg.
Yeah.
Okay. And so what else are the hubs then, let's say, if we're using this analogy?
Yeah.
So KZN, Durban, Eteguini is what?
Entertainment and tourism.
Okay.
Limpopo is more agriculture and agro-processing.
Okay, same as the Free State.
Yeah, in the Free State, and there's pockets in the Free State because majority of the state is dysfunctional, but majority of the people who are responsible for our food security, which are Afrikaners, they're based in the Free State. So there's things that work there, and you can only wish that there was more collaboration with the University of the Free State and stuff.
And so back to the topic at hand, what are the new reimagined things that can be done to take what we have, those pockets, regional pockets, this talent, pools of cash to stimulate something brand new in the rural economy, in the township economy?
I feel like we have enough amongst ourselves if we just started reimagining what things are. And I'll tell you of an example. Like, I'll talk about entrepreneurs that I work with, right? So there's Stokvels as an example.
Yeah.
And within the Stokvel economy, they often mention a figure of around 50 billion rand, right? But people have struggled to kind of put this or aggregate this and actually make it work for the majority of people who are in Stokvels, which are black people in townships, right? So you find it at a very micro level. But there's new innovations coming out. There's an entrepreneur who's got a master's in engineering as well as a master's in finance. And he's set up a Stokvel platform.
Yeah.
And just by doing that, we're seeing somebody who's able to bring community together to collectively put cash into new investments. And that is a fintech solution in the very same township environment that we're talking about that seems dysfunctional in some way. Yeah.
So when you say aggregate, people in the township in general save using this pool system called the Stokvels.
Yeah.
So in other words, we may on any day go to the township and think, oh, there's a lot of unemployment, there's a lot of poverty. But actually, there's 25 billion rands at any given point in time circling within the various townships through the Stokvel system.
Yeah.
If somebody took it, invested it, it would double.
Yeah.
That's the aggregation. It could build other businesses, but we're not thinking like that. And yet that Stokvel money is in rotation here.
Yeah.
That's the aggregation you're talking
about. I mean, a technology entrepreneur coming up with a solar solution using all of the roofs in a township like Soweto, right? Because the sun is always there.
Yeah.
And using the same community capital models, which are Stokvels, then you start realizing that we can solve for anything. We can self-fund for anything as long as we've got the imagination for it.
You've just taken us into new terrain. So let's just start with an indigenous township solution, Stokvels. 8.6 million people in South Africa belong to 421,000 Stokvels. Collectively, that's about 25 billion rands. That's in your hands.
Yep.
As Stokvel owners, if somebody found that 25 billion and said, let's find electricity solutions in the township, a new industry. Let's find an agro-processing solution in the Zierbekom area, another solution. Just tapping into Stokvel money, not knocking on any South African bank.
Yeah.
Okay, we'll be back in a moment. And in a moment, Bulelani Balabala will join us too.
You're listening to Lerato Mbele on Power 98.7, weekdays 9 a.m. to midday. Now we're talking.
Thank you very much for the headlines, Nyakalo Tefo. We are talking about how you stimulate the township economy and not stimulate what already exists. How to take what is there and reimagine something brand new. We're told that e-commerce Just 5-6 years ago was 1% of the retail economy. It's now almost 10% of the retail economy since COVID. Most people are shopping online. No, many people are shopping online. So there is a 90% gap to tap into. Why can't that be township entrepreneurs? Brand new. We're told that, you know, give or take, right now we have uninterrupted energy supply. After the 29th, it will get real again. And so when things get real, there's another way to generate energy. Use renewables, whatever, solar panels. Why can't that be where township engineers come into the equation? A brand new energy economy.
Yeah.
We're told about carbon capture and different ways of cleaning the environment, new technologies that can be used in mining, etc. So those engineering graduates in the township, why can't they start businesses in the field of green hydrogen, carbon capture? We're told about, you know, different forms of manufacturing using different kinds of technology. Well, if there was an industrial policy with tax incentives that allowed people to start entering these export processing zones and start manufacturing from furniture to equipment to whatever, why can't township guys do it? They can rebuild a Gushesha in 3 days.
Yep.
They know how to do it. So why can't they get into that system? So it's imagining what could be and then getting it done. And then tapping into the existing resources. And as Silebo Khumulefe was telling us, Stockvels is just one of those places where we can find pools of capital for stimulus. 2017 figures say in South Africa, 8.5 million people are members of Stockvels. Those Stockvels have 25 billion in circulation. Well, recent figures I'm seeing courtesy of Londiwe Buthelezi at News 24 says Stockvels have grown to 45 billion rands. So there's actually an increase in the pool of capital in savings. So instead of, you know, I'm not saying people mustn't use the Stockvel money to buy groceries at Christmas. That's why you're in it. But there's many other ways whilst you're building that capital in the banks, growing interest, where you say, where can we find the money to build a new shopping mall or a new factory in the township? It's in the Stockvel money is what Silebo Khumulefe is talking about. And then he said many other things. We need to stop, and this is all of us, myself included, we need to stop going to university or further education and training colleges because we want to work for a prestigious firm. Yes, you should work there to gain the skill, but your ultimate goal is to work for yourself. And so we need to have an innovation mindset, not an efficiency mindset. If I joined this firm, I would make it run efficiently. No. If I joined that firm, learned the tricks of the trade, I'd go and build something of my own, is what we're told. But that also needs registering IPs. It needs to be simple in law to register ideas, to find an ecosystem for design and creation. So CSIR plus what? CSIR and another. So we need more and more of these innovation incubation centers where people can explore and experiment to their heart's content until we find a eureka breakthrough innovation. And that way, it doesn't lead to the conflict between the corporate that supported you developing an idea, please call me, and yourself. If it was in a neutral space, you came up with an idea, you get compensated for it, you get royalties, you're not wrangling in court. So you need these neutral spaces, we're told. And then we can't ignore the advent of technology. Technology, whether you like it or not, it's driving this radio show now. It's how I'm communicating with my family. It's how I know that listeners are listening because they either tweet us or whatever. So technology becomes the new platform of doing business, selling, trading, banking. How do we leverage that in this context? Bulelani Balabala joins us now, and we're thankful that you finally logged on. He's the founder and director of Township Entrepreneurs Alliance. Good morning.
Good morning, Lot. How are you?
Fine, thank you, and thanks for joining us. Let me start off with a provocative statement, Bulelani. Marvin online says, Lerato, there's nothing more insulting and condescending than the use of the term township economy. I come from Mabopane, which is the most advanced in South Africa, even more than most towns. And it has attracted worldwide investors, including Sol Kersner. And from the Mabopane ecosystem, we stretch into industrial areas, then you go into Brits Farm areas, and then if you go further and further, you even get to Sun City. I guess that's the Sol Kersner reference. And so from a township, many things can mushroom, is what Marvin is saying. Your take, Bulelani.
No. I mean, I definitely, I think just a greeting to all the listeners and Flevoko, a gentleman I truly admire. No, man, I think, you know, based on what Marvin is saying, right? I mean, it carries a level of truth, right? I think from the base of functionality. But however, you know, I've entered into this debate with myself and my team a number of times. And I think, you know, I wouldn't want us to get involved much in, you know, the renamings, because then it takes away for focus. Yeah, because it takes away, it's a semantics. You know, it takes away the focus from what people already know it as, you know, as being advertised. And I think the biggest thing that we need to, you know, drive towards is, you know, the heavily, you know, bringing back those industries that were heavily operational in the township. So when a gentleman like Mr. Herman Mashaba told you that, you know, already years ago in the 1999s of this world, you already had 3,000 employees in the township of Soshanguve. You know, how do you then revitalize those industries that were in the township? If in a 10-meter, the dry cleaners that are supplying your urban areas like your Tembisas, how then do we then revitalize that, as opposed to, you know, I think for me, getting into the semantics of renaming. So I think for me, you know, when you sort of look at, you know, where the township economy, the economy that we sort of speak about today, where it sort of from the spawns from, or where it sort of then emanates from. I mean, it emanates from a highly formalized, and I think I like what Marvin said, a highly formalized, you know, very sophisticated, but yet simplified and understandable economy, where we're able to deliver excellence. An excellent product for various markets. I mean, I think now we know we sit in a position where, you know, one of the entrepreneurs that we worked with, you know, in the previous year, you know, sells glass sheeting. But I mean, you know, they sell glass sheeting, and, you know, these are numbers that people might not want to hear, but they sell glass sheeting from the township. There's no paving. You know, there's gravel roads, so it's gravel within their operation, and it's a zinc container. And I mean, they're making 70,000 rand a day minimum. But, you know, the biggest challenge with regards to this market and with this economy, which is why, as a precursor, you know, to leading into introducing me, you mentioned something amazing, which says, when I go to university, it must not be to earn a prestigious seat at a multinational, but is to be able to start my own thing, or in this particular case, to be able to contribute positively to the growth of this township economy. You know, that has been growing and bubbling with opportunities for a number of years. And I think that the real challenge for me is not that the township economy is not growing, but it's the individuals who then live within to be able to then be aware of its power, number one. Number two, being aware of its power, be very deliberate in where we spend our money. And then being very deliberate in where we're spending our money is to ensure that we are adequately supporting the industries that should be growing from this particular market. I mean, you sort of look at the country. I mean, factories have been shut down all over the show. You go to Ekurhuleni, which is, you know, was the industrial hub of the country with factories everywhere. I mean, you drive through Benoni, you drive through Jet Park, factories are shut down, you know, everywhere. Although we love the advent of commerce and e-commerce and e-commerce being an amazing platform and tool, but, you know, majority of those products in some way or another are products that are white labeled from other manufacturing countries and move to this country. Okay. And what we then need to then do is that to build an economic system that is able to then harbor and support the industrialists that are creating products and being able to paddle them onto these platforms so that we are consuming products that are actually creating jobs within this economy.
Okay, so you're speaking to a topic that was raised in our open line, which is import substitution. If somehow we were able to create some of the core mechanisms of trade here, instead of importing them, whether it's machinery in a factory, because we're told that some of our biggest imports into South Africa is machinery. So somebody wants to build a factory that purifies water. That purification system is not something built in South Africa. You have to import it. Okay. Yes. So the water is here. The rivers are all over. But the system that cleans it has to be imported. The generator that's going to run the diesel in case of load shedding is probably imported, certainly in the industrial generation. So those kinds of things, if we kind of factories that are making generators, factories that are making the water purification system, factories that can give us those big industrial sewing machines, then we create an economy locally for consumption and then for export. So that's the first thing you're talking about. And then we also have a skills transfer. What else would you suggest is a stimulus?
No. And I think for me, you know, constantly when you sort of hear the conversation around, you know, township, you know, it's marred by how do we revitalize, you know, this economy. But this economy is a very vibrant one, which is why you have foreign nationals who have taken over the spaza shop market. Mm. You know, it's because of the fact that we have downplayed, as people who grew up in these townships, we have downplayed the power of these various markets, of these markets and these industries in and themselves. Okay. And then I think largely so is because of the psychology behind them, because they're not as glamorous as having a corner office in Rosebank or in Sandton. Mm. You know, but therein the power lies in the non-glamorous tool that is able to affect the economic, that is able to affect you monetarily and the economic stance of yourself individually and also as your family. So it's shifting our perception or our view of how we actually view this economy. I mean, are we more interested in the glitz and the glam of it, or are we interested in building this economy? And I think also even from an entrepreneurial perspective, you know, the entrepreneur's fixation now is fixated in, we want to be the premium supplier of accounting, want to be the premium water, want to be the premium shoe brand, want to be the premium clothing, you know. But this is over fixation with glamour and premium that we then are forgetting the fact that, you know, rands, you know, equated over quantity, you know, at the end of the day are able to then, you know, build in a mass, a great fortune.
Okay, so the psychology is the second time the issue of psychology is coming up. Even Silebogo mentioned it, and this is where that whole thing, that comment that you say you like, it wasn't me, it was him who said this idea that when you go to university, and I use the example of a lawyer, he says, yes, when you go to university, you want to go and be a partner in a big law firm in Sandton and contribute to the efficient running of that law firm. But if you're that smart, why can't you start your own law firm? Why should you go and build somebody else's empire? And so a lot of our students are going to university because they want to be part of an existing entrenched status quo economy versus reimagining how they could use their skills to do something else. That's what he'd said.
Yeah. No, I definitely agree with that 100%.
Okay. So two things come up as you're talking, Bulelani. The first is the figure that says the township economy is valued at about 900 billion, so almost a trillion. Okay, so that's 1/5 of the overall South African economy.
And that's a conservative number.
Okay, but anyway, let's work with it. So almost 1/5 of South Africa incorporated, as we call it, is what we call the township economy. Within it, 60% is formalized, 40% is informal. So the question is, how do we formalize the remaining 40%?
Ah, perfect. So I then throw in a question, which I normally do as a caveat to say, what does formalization mean?
Okay.
You know, because, and I think that's the big thing that we then need to then underpin and unpack. Because we've often, you know, oftentimes when we speak, spoken about the informal markets, you know, it's been nuanced by almost unprofessionalism. It's been nuanced by they're not part of the formal banking system. And I think therein the challenge lies. In actual fact, in our data, in our preview, you know, it's the fact that, you know, 40% of these, or 40 or 30% of the businesses that are actually formal and registered, there's only 30% of them, and the bulk of them are informal industries, right, that's earmarked by the researchers. But the big challenge is the fact that, you know, it's not operated from a point of understanding. And the point of understanding says, we will not get them to come to our level. We will make sure that we go higher to where they actually operate from. Because they operate, the township economy, informal market, operates at a higher standard. The level of capabilities and skills to be able to maneuver, you know, and how they were able to build some of the systems that they're able to build. I mean, you sort of then track back a couple of years ago when GM was in the country and, you know, the dealership that was ran by Bob Richard Maponya made more sales than any other in the country. You sort of look at the Checkers outlets in the country that make the majority or the most amount of money and their demographic situation orientation. That then beckons the big thing to then say that these markets are very formal in their stance, but are we trying to get them to our way of operating? And if we try and get them to our big way of operating, the biggest thing that we need to unpack is, what is the incentive for them? And that's where we fail oftentimes. We fail to incentivize them coming into these systems. And as an entrepreneur, you know, truly driven by the motivations or motives that drive me. If I'm not incentivized by how does it save me money or how does it make me money, then I've got no interest because I'm already making money and operating the way that I am.
Okay.
You know, and as a small business that operates within this country from just wanting to formalize and the normal formalities, and registering with CIPC, getting a bank account, registering and getting your tax number and maintaining that, you already have a 25 to 30,000 rand bouncing on your head before you even make any money.
Okay. The second issue I wanted to raise with you, Bulelani, and then I'll bring Selebogo back, is the question of funding. Okay, many entrepreneurs, regardless of where you find them, will say, gosh, if I have to go to a bank and ask them to support my business, they make me jump through seven hoops plus a fire, a ring of fire, plus confront lions in a gladiator ring, plus swim through a river and then walk across a desert. And then at the end, they still say no. So there's the question of limited pools of capital. And so Selebogo was saying, if you can't source capital formally, what about these stockfills? They exist. The pools of money are banked. Why can't those be tapped into to build new industries in the township? What's your sense?
No, I definitely corroborate that, right? I mean, if he hadn't said it, I definitely would have, because, I mean, the stockfill market is one of the best ways for us to be able to huddle around and build the industries that we want to build. But what that then does is that it doesn't accelerate the development of these industries. But what it does is that it gives us the capabilities to be able to actually build the industries the way that we want to build the industries. But sometimes the issue with getting funding, you know, donor funding or outsource funding, is that it comes with stipulations and rules and regulation, especially if it's like your VC funding, you know, in terms of what you're trying to build and how you're trying to build it. But if we're able to build, you know, based off, and through the stockpile market, oftentimes it's patient capital, you know, that we're able to utilize in the growth of whatever we're trying to build, and you are held accountable all the way to the end. And I think there's this narrative that says that, you know, the stockfills are, you know, informal in that, you know, how will I know that my money will actually come and do not pay? You will know at the end of that month or 7 days after that month that you will actually raise the capital from somewhere, because it is a very serious thing and you are held accountable. Okay. But the stockpile market for me is the number one across the board, because if we talk about anything else, then we're throwing people into a pit of misinformation where they will be moved from pillar to post, and you need to raise collateral, you need to raise an asset base to be able to actually gain that funding. But it might not even be the type of capital that you're looking for towards the growth of your business. So the first one is definitely the stockpile market.
Okay, so let's go back to you, Selebogo, bring you back into the conversation. So two things. Some people say, listen, there are great ideas in the township, but unfortunately, there's two issues. Security is the first one.
Mm-hmm.
Scale is the second one. Your response?
I've experienced it. So during COVID, we set up a stockfill fund and we turned it into a cooperative with 100 people. We collected about 4 million rand from the public and we set up two stores. And came the July lootings, and that store, brand new store, after 1 month of trade, everything was gone.
Gosh.
That is security. And then even when we raised capital to build it up and, you know, trade again, then there was issues of protection fee and stuff, you know. And this is a fast food joint, doesn't sell alcohol, none of that stuff, but you still face the same issues. And that's just bred by the environment because of lawlessness here and there. And things work in certain areas, but that's one of the biggest challenges. So crime is a major deterrent for investing there. If anything, what you find is entrepreneurs starting in the township, but they actually get to thrive when they exit the township. So if we look at some case studies, think about Letabo of Walk Fresh. Mm-hmm. He's a sneaker cleaning business. Mm-hmm. That's a low skills job to do, to clean sneakers. But he branded it or packaged it in such a beautiful way that it was adopted more in the suburbs than in the township. So his township business is a cornerstone, but actually where he makes his real money is across the country in urban spaces.
Sure.
But and the challenge we face with that is in the township, he's having to spend double on security and.
Yeah. Bulelani, I don't know if you want to wade in, but you mentioned VC capital, and just so that we don't lose our audience, venture capital. So I'd like you just to elaborate briefly what you mean by that, which is, you know, money might not be in the bank, but money might be in the hands of a philanthropist or an organization that's just got cash, and they can help you develop your business, but they want to own shares in your business. So let's talk about different funding options for township businesses too.
You know, the thing is, you know, especially when I think when you talk about VC capital, yeah, I talk about the different funding options, you know, but I'll still go back to the fact that the stock flow market is the best. You know, and the reason why I say this for me, number one, is our experience in dealing with various VCs, you know, the biggest disparity or the challenge came in through the fact that they don't understand this market. And the biggest challenge sometimes when dealing with VCs is that if they don't understand the market, they don't jump in, you know, because they don't put money where they don't understand. And that's the biggest challenge.
Yeah.
And over and above that, then you end up spending copious amounts of time trying to get these individuals or this market, you know, to sort of buy into what this thing is, as opposed to being focused on what your actual business focus is. So I'd always say to entrepreneurs, if this advice is for entrepreneurs, I'd always say to entrepreneurs, focus on where the low-hanging fruits are. And the low-hanging fruits are being able to build an inclusive economy with other collaborators in the area, the section of the community that you are in, so that you are able to bulk buy certain products, number one. Number two, being able to start a stock flow that's going to help you guys buy and restock your shelves at the end of each month.
Okay.
Or the third, you are able to build a stock flow towards a certain gain, towards a certain end and growing within a particular industry. Those for me are the lowest hanging fruits because time ordinarily is not on our side and we spend these long copious meetings, sometimes they yield nothing. And I wouldn't want to send them down that particular gauntlet.
And just, I like examples. So very briefly, this is like saying somebody's running a very successful cake business, but the cake business is marketed by word of mouth and it's worked. And people buy cakes for weddings and imicimbi and funerals. And then a VC company says, I'm going to invest in your business, but I insist that you set up an Instagram page and you must do a lot of the marketing on Instagram. Okay. And then somebody says, no, man, I can't spend that much time on Instagram. Abo koko, abo auntie, abo banban, they know the yabon. Abo mama ba Stockfield, they know about my cakes. I just need to make sure that I'm delivering more cakes. But that person coming in is insisting you change the model. Is this what you're talking about, Bulelani?
No, definitely. You know, number one, it's about the person coming in telling you to change the model. But also, it's about the individual who comes in and sees it from their perspective and then wants to then run it from that particular perspective, you know. And I think it's important that we then understand. I mean, I'll give you an example. You know, being an entrepreneur who advocates for other entrepreneurs, I'm also one who operates within the space. We've got, you know, in one of our businesses, we've got a client that we've had now for the past 14 years. I've got an amazing relationship with the owner of that particular client, of that particular industry. It's a very big company. But however, the owner is very traditional in how he runs his business. So he still believes in face-to-face. And ordinarily, you're found in a situation in the age of Zoom and the age of Teams meetings. We still have to fly in and have a one-on-one meeting with him about something that we could have spoken about on email. And the nuance there, easily say to him, let's just have this on Teams. Then I've offended this individual and the meeting is no longer there. So if I read a business book authored by someone who is a foreign individual from the US or whatever teaching me about entrepreneurship, I'm automatically told that if the first meeting can't be on Zoom, then it's a wasted meeting. Then I've totally thrown away majority of the market within the country. So which is why that in the learning of this particular space, we then need to heavily contextualize ourselves in how business is done here so that we're able to thrive here.
Okay, very briefly, Max, you've got 30 seconds. Okay, not Max Garabo, you've got 30 seconds.
Hi, Lerato. Thank you for taking my call. Great topic. As an entrepreneur myself, I think we should have another session where we don't glamorize entrepreneurship. It is hard. It is a lonely journey. You do need a lot of support. And I do encourage all entrepreneurs to join an entrepreneurial hub where you can leverage off other experiences and the pains that you go through, because sometimes you don't make salaries at the end of the month. Sometimes you are without money and you have to negotiate with, you know, the banks or the cars, the school fees, etc. So it is a very lonely journey and it's not always the highlight that we talk about.
Thanks for a great story idea. We should just create a show one day where we say, entrepreneurs, share your stories. That's it. Open platform. Max, very briefly.
Hi, good morning, Lerato.
Yes, Ndata, go.
Yes, I've got a group of friends. We have a stock fair that we recently launched this year. And what I'm trying to do, I'm trying to convince the guys that we should not save to consume. Mm. We must save to build something for our children and our children's children. Mm. So we need to make sure that we venture into some businesses to make sure that whatever we have saved start working for us. Yeah. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. Okay, gentlemen, we've definitely run out of time. In 30 seconds, Bulelani, key thoughts on reimagining the township economy?
No, my definite key thoughts around reimagining the township for me is, number one, let's be very deliberate about who we spend our money on and where we spend our money. Okay. And it doesn't have to be large sums of money, but that 1 rand or 5 rand, you know, being able to spend it in the right sort of entity, you know, contribute immensely to the inclusive growth of that particular market. Okay. The third part is to the corporate partners and the corporate collaborators. If you're in a position of influence, open those doors. But don't just open those doors of opportunities. Open those doors and offer their peer mentorship and support to these amazing businesses so that they're able to take advantage of the opportunities that are available and supply development opportunities. Let it not just end at just talk shop and training. Let it actually be market access solutions where they actually end up becoming a supplier.
All right. Sileboho?
Collaborate. So find your tribe. Find the skills that you do not have within your group, and make sure that you're working as a collective. It always works out better when the responsibility is shared. There's so much more that can be done.
Very insightful. Gentlemen, I want to thank you for your time. Sileboho Molefe, Managing Director of The Biz Plug, B-I-Z, and Bulelani Balabala, Director of the Township Entrepreneurs Alliance.
You've been listening to a Power 98.7 podcast. For more podcasts, visit power987.co.za or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.